Thanks for listening to this podcast of Faith Radio Mornings from Faith Radio. Today is the day you have made. I will rejoice and be glad in it. Today is the day you have made. I will rejoice and be glad in it. And I won't worry about tomorrow. I'm trusting in what you say. Today is the day. Good morning, everyone. It's hard to believe, but it is actually the 4th of September. It is after Labor Day, and sadly enough, I think that means that summer is mostly in the rearview mirror around the country. But the good news is that the sun is still rising this morning, and the Son of God, Jesus Christ, has risen. And so we here at Faith Radio Mornings and all through our listening audience, the affiliates and streaming around the country, we are all part of a kingdom that has no end. And so we celebrate this wonderful good news every morning that we start our day together on Faith Radio Mornings. And I am your host, Dr. Peter Kapsner, joined in studio by the familiar names of Logan Roush and Paul Perreault, who keep things running smoothly as we deal with the news and deal with the topics of the day, hopefully not from a Democratic or Republican, liberal, conservative standpoint, but rather from a Christian view with authenticity and some fun and some hope, complexity, not afraid to get into the hard conversations. And to that end, I love having Dr. David Stevens, one of the experts that is part of the Faith Radio Network of people that come in and talk about a wide variety of issues and Dr. Stevens from a medical standpoint, but he's also a believer, and he tells wonderful stories about how the faith and following Jesus really does intersect with medical practice. And if you listen to Faith Radio Mornings regularly, you know that we start with quotes each morning, and I would love to get Dr. Stevens' take on this. So good morning, Dr. Stevens. Are you with us here this morning?
I sure am, Peter. Great to be with you.
So I have a quote from a second century theologian, Tertullian, who writes this about prayer. And prayer has been so central to the Christian journey. And I would love your take on this. He says, "Prayer cleanses us from sin. It drives away temptations, stamps out persecutions, it comforts the faint-hearted, gives strength to the courageous, it brings travelers safely home, it calms the waves, confounds the robbers, feeds the poor, overrules the rich, lifts up the fallen, and supports those who are falling, and sustains those who stand firm." And prayer really is something, Dr. Stevens, that is central to our journey, regardless of whether we're physicians, stay-at-home parents, teachers, lawyers, radio show hosts, it doesn't matter. That prayer really is something that has been part of this kingdom that we're a part of since the beginning.
Yes, and I think that's probably one of the most comprehensive statements I've heard on prayer in a long time. And you experience that. I know I have as a physician. You realize that you're facing often very difficult problems with patients, telling them that they have terminal illnesses or a chronic disease, and or standing in a surgery, as I did in Africa so many times as a family practice doctor, facing something that I didn't have adequate training to deal with, yet there was no one else to take care of it. And feeling God's presence. In fact, across from my desk in my office is a painting of a doctor in surgery. The nurse is there, and the doctor's bending over the patient doing his work, and there standing beside him is Christ with his hand on his shoulder giving him direction. It's my favorite painting as far as being a physician and trying to be Christ to people through compassion and care and using your expertise to bless people. And I don't know how many times I've said as I've spoken, you know, all the money in the world when you're raising funds to go as a missionary or friendships or encouragement and all that is nothing compared to the need for prayer as you face challenging situations. And I've experienced that and experienced God answering prayers in just unbelievable ways and seeing his hand on mine.
Well, it's Dr. David Stevens. Just love having you part of the show and talking about these medical conversations from a Christian perspective, just knowing the depth and richness of your own faith. And so we'll take a short break. We come back. Some of the topics of the day that I'd love to get into with you, Dr. Stevens, is that there seems to be an increasing shortage of physicians around our country. And also, too, there's some new guidelines for how we should have our kids strapped into that minivan as we're driving around the city. So lots more to come here with Dr. David Stevens on Faith Radio Mornings.
Doctor, my eyes have seen the years and the slow parade of years without Christ. Now I want to understand.
Welcome back to Faith Radio Mornings. I'm Dr. Peter Kapsner, and joined, you've already heard his voice, by Dr. David Stevens, who's the CEO of the Christian Medical and Dental Association, does a lot with medical missions, and just so conversant on the medical issues of our time. And Dr. Stevens, obviously we're talking about prayer before a break. Can you give us a little sense on any of some of the studies that are done these days about the importance of prayer among patients and families? I mean, we may not experience the healing that we want, but there does seem to be a correlation between a patient's well-being and the prayer that they're doing throughout the course of their treatment.
Oh, absolutely so. And there's great studies showing the spiritual impact that prayer can have and the physical impact on people's lives. And they really desire this. 82% of patients believe that prayer can heal. And 50 to 78% wish their doctor would pray with them. You know, Peter, since we last were talking a couple of weeks ago, I've been to India and back. And while I was there, I had to come back early. Actually, my wife had a medical emergency, ended up in the hospital, had sinus surgery. She's doing well. But you know what she talked about when she came home? She talked about the fact that her doctor prayed with her. It was one of our CMDA members here locally, and how reassuring and helpful that was to her, and an encouragement and a blessing as she was preparing to go to surgery and was dealing with this. So prayer and our spirituality is an integral part of our life, and probably no more greater place where people see the need for it than when they're seriously ill and facing a terminal illness or facing a surgery or whatever. It's just a blessing when people have their doctor deal with their spiritual issues as well as their physical ones.
I'm glad to hear that your wife is okay. And just to your point that to have a doctor pray, what are some of the guidelines that physicians need to live by? I mean, I think about teachers in the classroom, and just my brother is a Christian teacher in a high school classroom and has some boundaries about how much he can talk about his faith. Do doctors live by the same sort of code or ethics by what they can talk about, and can they pray with their patients?
You do it with permission. First of all, you ask, would you like me to pray with you before your surgery or, you know, at this time over this issue? You do it with sensitivity, and you do it with respect. And it's actually the vast majority of people say yes. Occasionally people say no, I prefer not to, and you respect that. But letting them know that you're willing to do that. And we teach I've taught over 20,000 healthcare professionals, not only in this country, but literally around the world, how to address spiritual issues in their practices. I know when I came to CMDA almost 25 years ago, there was a lot of guilt-ridden Christian doctors saying, I know I should do something, but I don't know how to do this. I don't feel it's right to be handing out the four spiritual laws when somebody comes in for a cold. And so we teach them how to raise spiritual issues, how to take a spiritual history. And in fact, that's a standard of care now, that should be included, just like your social history, your past medical history, all the things that we ask about. You also should ask some questions about where they are spiritually. So whether they're a Christian or not, you can connect them to their support system. And so we use simple mnemonics to teach them how to do it. There's one called FICA, like what you get on your paycheck for something you pay the government. And is faith in God important to you? What impact does your faith have on your life? How important is your faith community to you? And how can I assist you in your spiritual needs as you're going through this illness? And then teaching doctors to give patients permission to address these issues, knowing that it's okay, by raising what we call faith flags. Faith flags are just natural part of the conversation. They take no more than 30 seconds, help identify yourself as a member of God's family. They look for but do not demand a response. They create an opportunity for the patient to talk about these things if they want to. And then a faith story when it's appropriate, in the natural part of the confirmation, a couple of minutes of how God's worked in your life, how he's impacted you or your family. And it's God or the Bible or church or book, not your denomination or not what you shouldn't be doing, but just letting them know that you're willing to have a spiritual conversation. And then with permission and sensitivity and respect, look for those opportunities to go deeper, and helping healthcare professionals, Peter, understand that coming to faith is a journey, and very few people do it because of one incident. They're cultivated, they're sowing, there's harvesting before the harvesting takes place, and that you may just be part of that where God is using them, you to touch their lives. So there's no greater mission field, I think, left in this country than in healthcare professionals' practices who see thousands of patients each year in difficult times of their life and have the opportunity to minister to them with the compassion and love.
That's Dr. David Stevens. If you want to join the conversation, you can call in or text the studio at 877-933-2484. That's 877-93-FAITH. Would love your thoughts if you have any questions, part of the conversation. And Dr. Stevens, I find what you're saying fascinating about just sort of taking even a faith history, because it's pretty unique on the world scene these last maybe 50-100 years or so in Western culture that we would divorce our spirituality from our physical reality, because throughout time and space, they're seen as they're interwoven together. So it is interesting that maybe we're seeing a movement back that direction to recognize that our spiritual health has a pretty significant impact on our biological health.
There's no doubt about it. And there's lots of studies now in the literature that actually show that. And people want this. This isn't something you're imposing on them. They're thinking about these issues. If there's a serious illness or a serious diagnosis, they're thinking about their own mortality. And it's not something the doctor can do alone. You're so busy. You can broach the subject, raise the issue, but then having a team that works with you and in your office to help deal with these things, or you know, getting Paul and Luke back together again, you know, Paul the apostle and Luke the physician. We have members that have their pastors come and do counseling in their office a day a week and give them an office space and refer people, or finding people in your church that have dealt with issues that some of your patients have with drug abuse or addictions or whatever, and getting them, you know, together so they can have an impact on their life, or into a recovery movement at your church for people who've dealt with things like this. So I think we need to team up and realize this is something important that we need to do. There's more instances, Peter, of Christ healing in the Gospels than there are of him preaching. And then he always combined it with pointing people to his Father. And I think as Christian healthcare professionals, we need to do that with permission, with respect, with sensitivity, but not ignore the elephant that's in the room.
It's Dr. David Stevens, and just talking with us about the importance of faith, and even that Jesus was the great physician, and how we understand the holistic role of medicine and spirituality in our lives. And Dr. Stevens, when we come back from break, be curious. There's some studies that come out that I would love your take on, which is, I understood that we should keep our kids in rear-facing child seats up until about the age of two, and then we could flip them around. But it sounds like some of the guidelines are changing. So for the parents and the grandparents out there that have young children that are carting them around day in and day out, we'd love to get Dr. Stevens' take on how to best seat our children in our cars next on Faith Radio Mornings. It's 20 minutes past the hour here on Faith Radio Mornings, and still love being joined on the line by Dr. David Stevens, who joins us regularly just to talk about some of the medical and dental conversations of our day from a Christian perspective. And Dr. Stevens, I've referenced it before, we have five children, and there was always this glorious moment when we were done with the car seat that weighed about 100 pounds in and of itself, plus maybe the 30 pounds of child in there, when we could finally get rid of the car seat, you know, and the shoulder contusions it was causing, and flip them around, and they could face forward, and we could have conversations with our kids. But it sounds like maybe now they're changing some of these guidelines.
They are. And, you know, there are about four kids die every day under the age of 14 in this country in car accidents. So it's the leading cause of death in children. So this is an important topic. And before, they've kind of said, well, you know, keep them in that rear-facing car seat up until 2 years of age. But the American Academy of Pediatrics just came out with new recommendations and saying they should be rear-facing until they weigh 40 pounds or more, which means for most of kids, that's past their second birthday. And then keep them rear facing as long as possible, because it's the safest way for a child to ride. So once they outgrow the rear facing seat, then a forward facing seat with a harness until they reach its height and weight limits. And that can be up to 65 pounds now. So when you flip them around, you still have them in a child car seat, and they go from that to a booster seat, which raises them up high enough that the lap and shoulder belt fit properly, and that goes up to 4'9" in height before you take them out of that. And that's about 8 to 12 years of age. They're ready to go into a adult seat. But it's important. It's a hassle. I agree it's a hassle, but it's not nearly as much a hassle as going visiting your child in the hospital. because they weren't secured well and you got in an accident. And I think the protection, an ounce of prevention is worth a pound of medicine. And you want to protect your child as best as possible. We got 10 grandkids, 9 with one on the way. So, you know, we're starting to transport kids around, too, and moving car seats from mom and dad's car to our car or getting our own. And so we're back to where we started and using it even more than we did back then.
Well, and I think it's important. I sometimes look in the back seat, and to your point with the booster seat, and see maybe our 6, 7, or 8-year-old back there, and the seatbelt is almost cutting across their neck without the booster seat. And I've got to believe that's not safe. I just think about even a seatbelt could become a sharp edge if it's going across the neck, and just the lack of safety there.
Yeah, you can actually, if you have a seatbelt across the child's neck in an accident, you can actually rupture their larynx and they can die from it because the pressure of that seatbelt when they go forward and it connects and doesn't move can be strangling and damaging as well. So, yeah, these are important concepts and something that we don't often think about. But I think it's like everything else, getting a habit. You know, when I was a child, we didn't even have seatbelts. We've traveled all over the country with my dad, who was an evangelist, the three of us in the back seat. And God's grace, we survived. We've got better protection now, and glad for it.
Well, I think we all have those stories growing up in my generation and in our generation of just in those wood-paneled station wagons where we're lumped in 27 kids in the back there and just the you know, big mass of humanity. It's amazing that any of us survived.
Yeah, and no video games. We used to play count the brown cows and the black cows and get points for them or look for license plates and try to get all 50 states. That's what we did when we traveled.
Well, Dr. Stevens, going back to our previous conversation before the break, we did have a listener text in that they're having a procedure done, and it's a pretty significant one. Could be a life or death situation, and not feeling great about the neurologist that is attending to them, not a great spiritual feeling, even delaying the procedure. And do you have any recommendations or suggestions for our listener who isn't feeling comfortable with sort of the spiritual atmosphere around what is a very significant procedure?
Yeah, and you're unlikely to have all your doctors be addressing spiritual issues. And but I think it's important to at least have one. And if you don't have one, it may be you need to be looking for another doctor. Now, it depends where you're on your care and you don't want to delay a procedure that might be needed. But I tell members they can go to our website. I mean, tell people they can go to our website and find a Christian doctor by putting in their zip code and what specialist they're looking for. There's no guarantee there'll be one close in their area. And a lot of our doctors don't even have their names listed because their practices are so full. They can't take anymore. But that's one way to look for a Christian doctor. Second way is to ask people at your church who they know. And often those type of recommendations come back and people identify a doctor. You know, and what we're talking about in doing this type of evangelism, I should have mentioned there's a book that actually one of my former staff and a member who wrote our curriculum called Grace Prescriptions. They did this for the public, and it's called Going Public, and it's how to share your faith in a very natural way in the midst of what you're doing every day. And I recommend that book highly. It's available on Amazon, Going Public by Walt Larimore and Bill Peel. And that'll help you as you have your opportunities to point people towards Christ.
That's so important. And where's the website, Dr. Stevens? I know a lot of listeners would be very interested in finding out a network of Christian qualified physicians to do some care with them.
Yeah, CMDA, that stands for Christian Medical and Dental Associations, CMDA.org. And just remember those initials, and it's the first thing that comes up when you do that kind of search as our organization. Click on that and look for Dr. Search, and you'll get right to where you need to be.
Well, Dr. Stevens, we have about a minute left, and I know next time we have you on the program, we really want to spend time talking through a book release that you have called Jesus MD, A Doctor Examines the Great Physician. So give us a little tease, Dr. Stevens, of the content of this book.
Well, you know, I read a book a long time ago called A Shepherd Examines the 23rd Psalm, and I got so many insights because understanding what shepherds and sheep did put all those analogies into context. And that's what Jesus MD, it's looking at Christ as the great physician through the eyes of him being the doc and his interns or his disciples and how he taught and things he did as he healed and touched people. And it gives you new insights into the character of Christ and help you understand him better. and to give you information that help you grow spiritually as well. So it was a fun book to write, and it's going to be a great book to talk about.
I can't wait to have you join us again in a couple of weeks to go through that book. I'm sure we'll have some giveaways for our listeners as well as we just kind of talk through this intersection of faith and our medical care, something that seems so important. Thanks for talking us through all these issues again this morning, Dr. Stevens.
Great to be with you, Peter.
All right, we'll take a break for Breakpoint, as well as bottom of the hour news. In the second half of this hour, we'll be joined by Dr. David Aikman, who's our regular guest, talking about foreign affairs and global issues from a Christian perspective. So again, much more to come on Faith Radio Mornings. Of course, we do a lot of serious news topics here on Faith Radio Mornings, but I'm always amazed by the volume of information sitting on my desk when I come in and some of the stories. This one could not be better news for those of us that love the iconic M&Ms of American culture. It says a pair of stolen M&M statues in New Jersey are safe after being miraculously returned. Seems like a bit of hyperbole there, but Mr. Red and Mr. Yellow M&Ms were reportedly stolen sometime after August 19th, but the state police, even though they didn't share any details about it, the 3-foot-tall candy figurines were returned. There is nothing but good news, I suppose, in that story. Lots more to come here on Faith Radio Mornings. We'll be joined by Dr. David Aikman, and he'll talk about some of the global issues of our day from a Christian perspective. Last week, we had Trevin Wax on the program, a young pastor. He's identified as one of the top 33 millennial pastors in the next generation. And he was talking about the difference of accessing the Bible in paper versus on our phones.
You also are more likely to skim texts on your phone than you are going to really dig in and read it with comprehension. And so, and one of the beautiful things about Bible apps are all those study helps.
Yes.
Those are fantastic. I think they're wonderful. But sometimes those study helps can actually be a distraction from the text itself. Or you've got other notifications that are popping up. And so your Bible just becomes one app among many on the phone. And so, again, I'm for them. I just think we need to ask the deeper questions about what they mean and what they represent. I think use the phone when it's you need to get to the Bible quickly, you need to find something, you want it to be accessible, or you don't have time to carry around a Bible. But in your deep personal study and reflection and meditation, I'd go with print. I think the studies show that our brains respond differently to the printed text than the what we have on our phones. And so I think we'll have better engagement if we can use both for different purposes.
So enjoyed the conversation with Trevin last week. Articulate and passionate, anchored in the faith, a young person, next generation. Just love hearing how this kingdom just keeps rolling on. If you want to catch that entire segment, you can head to myfaithradio.com, search for Bible or app or anything like that, and you'll find a great segment with Trevin Wax. Well, up next on Faith Radio Mornings, we'll be joined by our foreign affairs correspondent, Dr. David Aikman, and I'll ask him about the president coming to Ireland, where Dr. Aikman lives next.
When moms and dads are in the thick of it, when every day brings up a new conflict and teens seem to change personality by the week, it's hard to keep the goal in mind. Hi, I'm Mark Gregston with Parenting Today's Teens. The goal is this. Mom and dad, you're preparing your child to function independently in the world. You're giving her the skills she needs to live an autonomous life. So how do you reach the goal today? Don't be afraid to let disappointment and rejection into your child's life. They've got to face it sometime. And talk through the conflicting messages in our culture. Don't isolate them to a protective bubble. And finally, demonstrate commitment and character in your personal life. You're a bigger role model than you think.
Want to bring Mark to your church or community? Find out how to request an event in your area when you visit parentingtodaysteens.org. That's parentingtodaysteens.org.
My name is Bond, James Bond.
And of course, every time I hear that accent, I sure wish that I had that same accent. It just makes everything that somebody says from a British accent just sound credible. And Dr. David Aikman, the president, is taking a trip to Ireland here shortly that wasn't necessarily terribly anticipated, but it's part of him traveling to celebrate and commemorate the First World War.
That's right. He's going to France in November to honor the armistice of 1918, and he's stopping off at Ireland on the way. And you would think that somebody was coming into town to blow up the Irish Parliament or something because of the fuss that's been made by opposition people in the Irish Parliament is quite interesting.
Well, and is the opposition in Ireland towards the president, is that pretty much in the majority? I mean, the headlines certainly make it seem like there isn't a single person in Ireland that likes the president, because there is really this vociferous response to him.
Well, I think the media in Ireland is overwhelmingly liberal and progressive and doesn't like the president for a variety of reasons. But my sister was on a local secular station yesterday, and she said, "Why are you making such a big fuss about Donald Trump? You didn't protest when John Kennedy came in 1960, and he had an ongoing womanizing affair in the White House after he was president. So why should you complain about Trump?" But anyway, who knows?
Well, in terms of the secularization, too, I know last time you were on the program, we ran out of time at the end, and I wanted to revisit it with you. You talked a bit about some of the trends within Ireland and even the lack of welcome of the Pope when he came a few weeks ago, being pretty lukewarm in that situation, that there really has been changes over these last 20, 30 years in terms of the secularization of the country.
You're absolutely correct. I mean, the figures for church attendance at Catholic Mass, back in, say, 1979, when Pope John Paul visited Ireland, those figures were about 93%. But now they're way down to the 80%. Now, that's still a high figure for a country in Europe that attends church. But considering the role that the Irish Church played in dominating Irish society and culture, it's a huge step back from what it was.
And it seems like some of the sociological study done is that the kinds of things that are going on in Europe and the secularization, that it's really only about a generation ahead of the United States in terms of the U.S. becoming more secularized as well. Are we seeing almost sort of this global, or at least the Western culture, decline of the church in both of these categories?
I don't think there's any question. I mean, some people in the United States, even today, say that the culture is post-Christian. I don't believe it is, but it's certainly gotten to the point where the number of people who say they don't believe in any religion and don't go to church has gone up to about 15% of the population. And that's a larger figure than it ever was before. And in Europe, the number of people who would classify themselves as having no religion or certainly not praying at all is way above that. So it's an interesting change.
And is some of that related to just sort of the wealth of the Western countries? Because some of the places in the world where the church is growing, and I'm sure you see some of this in your travels and observations, that in non-Western countries, we really do see the growth of the church. But when a country becomes wealthy and maybe self-sufficient, we do begin to see a decline in the faith.
Well, that's certainly part of it. The increasing wealth of middle-class societies tends to weaken church-going, whereas in poorer parts of the world, church-going and church attendance remains pretty high. But I think it's, in the case of Ireland, part of the problem is that the Roman Catholic Church had such a hold on the culture for so many years, particularly after Ireland became independent in 1922, that the culture was given a great jolt when all of these scandals about pedophilia and sort of homosexuality among priests and so forth, when that became known, and then it was apparently covered up by some prelates in the church, the Irish people really lost their confidence in a large measure in the authority of the Roman Catholic Church.
Well, and is some of this loss of confidence in the secularization, is it leading to maybe some of the decline in the historic religious tensions in some of these countries? I mean, I know in Ireland there historically has been a Catholic and Protestant divide that has even led to violence. Do we see a decline in that, or is that still as tense as it's always been?
Well, no, I think ever since the Good Friday Agreement of the 1990s, when Northern Irish Protestants basically made peace with the Republicans who'd been trying to get independence from the United Kingdom. I think people in Ireland have come to a more equitable sense of North-South relations between the British part of Ireland and the Irish Republic. But I think in general, the sort of secularization of social values has meant that people have lost faith in any absolutes as having any real validity. And I think this is potentially quite disturbing for the stability of any society.
Yeah, if you can speak to that just a bit more, too. I know with my students, I'm heading back to class here this month, Dr. Aikman, and their sense of the fact that there may be truth in this world is not something that they're really growing up with. It's sort of whatever works for you, works for you, and that may not work for me, but you sort of do your own thing. But speak about the stability of society when we begin to pursue things in such an individualistic fashion.
Right. I mean, postmodernism is essentially the view that nobody has a handle on truth, and in fact that truth doesn't seem to exist. And that is quite disturbing, because that has led to the questioning of basic scientific discoveries. I mean, the fact that water boils at 100 degrees Celsius and 212 degrees Fahrenheit, even that sort of known biological, well, not biological, no scientific and physical fact is being questioned by large numbers of people. They think that, oh, that's Western science, that's white science, as though water boils at a lower temperature in China than in Washington, D.C. I mean, that's the disturbing part of it.
It does speak to just the difficulty of holding together a culture when there can't be any agreed upon just sort of truths around common values. Well, Dr. Aikman, another place in the world that does experience a lot of tension is the Mideast. And when we come back from break, I'd love to get your thoughts on Iran beginning to flex its muscles even more so in the Mideast in terms of Israel and some of that neck of the woods and what that might mean for people of faith there. So lots more to come with Dr. David Aikman on Faith Radio Mornings. Welcome back to Faith Radio Mornings. I'm Peter Kapsner, and joined by global affairs correspondent for our show, Dr. David Aikman. We've been talking about religious tension, secularization, and the impact that has on us as believers. And of course, Dr. Aikman, in the Mideast, there's just this ongoing tension that sometimes is at a really low, sort of beneath the surface level, and sometimes it begins to erupt a little bit more fervently. And it sounds like maybe we're on the rise of tensions there as Iran is flexing some muscle in the Mideast. So talk to us about what's happening there. We don't. Well, we'll have to go away from the line, unfortunately. He's just so helpful in terms of talking through so many of these issues with us. I wanted to ask him about the tensions there. If you've had a chance to travel to the Mideast, and I know I had an opportunity to study there for the better part of 3.5-4 weeks, and one of the fascinating dimensions about the Mideast, and Israel in particular, is visiting the city of Jerusalem. And in Jerusalem, there's an old section of the city that's about 2 square miles, and it's inhabited by 4 different people groups. The Jews sort of have one section of the city. The Muslims have another section of the city. Christians have another section of the city. And the Armenian Turks have another section. And you just can walk in 2 miles and experience this almost ancient, historic global strife. And so many of the religions really lay claim to Jerusalem being the central place of sanctity for them. And I know Dr. Aikman has spent a lot of time covering the Mideast. I'd love to get his thoughts. Dr. Aikman, do we have you again back on air?
Yes, I'm back online. Thank you.
Wonderful. Well, we were just talking about some of the tensions in the Mideast, and Iran is flexing its muscles a bit more there in what is historically a place where there's quite a bit of tension, as I was just describing.
That's right. Well, the Iranians took a body blow to their presence in Syria in the last few days when the Israelis spotted an incoming cargo flight from Iraq that was carrying Iranian missiles that were going to be used to fire against Israel. And they launched a really fierce attack on that on those missiles once they were unloaded, killed quite a few Iranians, including apparently some Iranian generals. The bottom line for Israel is they won't accept that Iranians are using the territory of Iraq as a base for attacking Israel. And they've told not only the Syrians this, but the Russians also. And the Russians are eager to avoid this confrontation of Syria and Iran over, of Israel and Iran over Syria from turning into a real spark for a major conflict.
At some point, does violence almost just become the sort of way of life, a low level of it that's sort of expected? I mean, I know, for example, in the United States and in Chicago, there's such violence going on in some of the shootings, but it almost gets to be part of the headlines in such a way that it, unfortunately, you almost get, I suppose, quote unquote, used to it, which you never should. But is that part of what happens in the Middle East, too? There's just this tension that boils over in some level of violence so often that people just get used to it?
Well, I think, yes, people do get sort of numbed to the outbreaks of violence. I mean, when 200 people, for example, get killed in a suicide bomb in Baghdad, a lot of people tend to shrug and say, well, what's new? That doesn't that happen all the time? So that's a major issue. You do get numbed to repeated news of violence, especially if it continues to come from the same part of the world.
And Dr. Aikman, we have just about a minute left or so. Is there some sort of hope? I mean, we've talked about the secularization of culture and maybe hope or lack thereof. Is there hope moving forward in the Middle East that something would be resolved at some point?
Well, there are all kinds of discussions that you can get on online and through YouTube about the fact that the Trump administration may have put together a peace plan for the Middle East that doesn't threaten any of these special interests of Israel. Of course, because the United States supported Israel on the Jerusalem issue, the Israelis, I think, probably have a certain degree of willingness to listen to what the Americans are doing about the peace process. So I don't know when that will surface, but something is in the works, I think.
Well, so love your perspective. Glad we got you back online. I know sometimes the technology between two countries, apparently maybe somebody's hacking us, Dr. Aikman, here in the morning. So thanks for staying patient and staying with us in the morning.
Thank you so much for having me, Peter.
We'll talk to you next week, and we'll take a quick break and wrap up our show. Fun show. Hope you enjoyed it coming back from the Labor Day holidays. We're all sort of heading back to school. It's just great to talk with Dr. Aikman and Dr. Stevens again. And I know on tomorrow's show, we had a full 2 hours together with Dr. Bruce Ashford, Justin Gibney, Kent Kaiser, and Bill English will be joining us talking through a number of the issues of the day. So glad that you're listening. Glad that you joined the conversation. Text and call. And remember that tomb is empty and we're part of a kingdom that has no end.
Again, thanks for listening to this podcast of Faith Radio Mornings. You can hear other podcasts at myfaithradio.com. Plus, remember, we are listener-supported, so your support makes Faith Radio Mornings and the other programs from Faith Radio possible. Make your gift at myfaithradio.com.